You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
All right, quiet on set, please.
Today, we check out a film set in Brentwood's Mandeville Canyon.
As few people back here as physically possible, everybody needs to be on the other side of the house.
Thank you.
Or like over in the garage at the director.
The director and the camera woman get the set ready for their next shot. Two women in a Jeep in front of a Spanish-style mansion are starting on a road trip.
And action!
It's a buddy comedy, says the producer.
It's about two friends, buddies, and a third friend comes along, and it creates tension in the friendship. And we have an interesting little twist at the end.
The writers finished that script only a few hours earlier.
Diane and I have found that we work really well together because we complement each other's skills.
She is really good at just getting the words on the page, and I am really good at sussing out what the underlying core of the story is.
Did you notice anything unusual? Yeah, all the filmmakers are women. In fact, on this set, you'll not find one single guy, which, as we all know, is almost unheard of in the film industry. And not only that, the women here come with a mix of all kinds of backgrounds. That's according to director Jaca Soiree, who is of African and French descent.
We have some Russian girls, we have some Valley girls, we have some New York chicks. We've got like Dominican, like everything, Irish. We have an older woman in our crew, transgender. That's the world I live in. That's the world I want to see on the screen.
Reporter Kirsten Zilm went out to discover what's the same and what's different when it's all women on the set.
You have your sunglasses, you have cell phones, you have... Good. Do you have lipstick?
Yeah.
You do that. You do.
Director Jaca Soiree talks to her actors. While around her, the women responsible for camera, sound, light, props, script continuity, and any other aspect of the next scene get the set ready. 30 professional filmmakers are part of this crew. This is the Women's Weekend Film Challenge, which brings together female professionals to create a movie within 78 hours. Their ages range from the early 20s to mid-60s. Some women have worked in the industry for a few years, others for decades. They all have one thing in common.
I had never worked with all women before.
Never just women.
Actually, this is my very first one, and I'm really, really impressed, and I'm really, really happy being here.
And they agree. There are a few notable differences to sets that are run by men.
Let me tell you, problems get solved much quicker.
No one's yelling.
I don't feel the nervous tension or stress. Everybody's here to support each other, and that with other productions, it's you're on your own.
And there haven't been any like big egos or anything like that. Like, it's been pretty seamless, I have to say.
They also say this is not about hating men, kicking male filmmakers out of business, or never working with a man again. This is about lifting up women in the industry, about networking so they can know about each other, hire each other, and refer each other to anybody with the power to hire talent.
In my years working in the independent film world, I was getting almost all of my jobs from people I had worked with before. Most opportunities are not advertised.
This is Katrina Medoff, actor, writer, and producer.
You want to go with the people that you trust, and you want to go with the people that you can spend long hours with and enjoy working with. So everything in the film industry really comes from referrals.
Katrina saw many good women in the film industry who did not get a lot of opportunities to work. So in 2018, she and her business partner, Tracy Sire, created the Women's Weekend Film Challenge in New York. First, they financed everything themselves. They still have day jobs, but by now also sponsors who donate high-end equipment and insurance for the sets and crews. Now, Katrina and Tracy are bringing the challenge to Los Angeles for the first time. 6 teams of 30 female filmmakers are called to create a short fiction feature within 1 weekend.
At 6 p.m. on the Thursday the challenge begins, we pull a different genre out of a hat for each team on Facebook Live, and we assign them all a prop that they have to incorporate. So this time it was a backpack. And then after that, they write shoot and edit a short film in one weekend, compose an original score, color correct everything, complete it, and then send it to us by 11:59 p.m. that Sunday.
To apply and participate in the challenge is free. The women pay in time, nerves, sweat, and sleepless nights. Script supervisor Mary Sherlock has been in the industry for more than 20 years. This, she says, is the best networking experience she has ever been a part of.
This is going to be a big door to open up for women filmmakers. It's not really a challenge. It's just a big opportunity.
Alana De Freitas is an actress, writer, and producer from Australia. One of her productions recently got an award at Sundance for gender parity in front of and behind the camera.
I think that it's super important for women to see other women thriving and doing well and understanding, I don't need anybody else's permission to go and do this. And it just sets a really good example and then motivates you more to go out and hire more women on other sets. Or when you have a friend who's asking, I'm looking for a soundie, like to be able to refer people from the challenge. It just spreads the word.
Ash Knowlton is one of these soundies. Her field is dominated by men who told her it would take many years before she would be working on a feature film. Then Ash participated in the first Women's Weekend Film Challenge in New York.
And within 6 months, I was on a feature film. It like took my career. It just jump-started it in this way. And of course, I'm not making union rate. But that doesn't matter because on IMDb, it shows that I did a feature.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
42 hours into the LA challenge, the mood on the sets is great.
Camera speeds.
Teams are filming a Western in a warehouse, a mockumentary in a mansion, and a thriller in a coffee shop. The team filming the body comedy got lucky. Their producer lives in a house right at the edge of Mandeville Canyon, with great mountain and city views, huge deck, infinity pool, a Jeep and a Jaguar in the garage.
Cut!
The scene with the Jeep is almost done. Team leader Alana makes sure the crew gets ready for the next shot. She likes to think ahead. That's why she saved contact infos of all the women in this challenge on her phone.
I even went into our team leader folder and copied down the contact lists of all the other teams. So, yeah, I've got 200 women's contact details now and they will be hearing from me.
If you want to see the 6 films produced during this challenge, they will be screened tonight at the ArcLight Cinema in Hollywood. From there, they'll go to festivals to show the world stories women want to tell. For KCRW, I'm Kerstin Zilm.
All right, coming up, amid all the decades of figuring out a national healthcare policy, one local family clinic has persevered and grown. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. 50 years ago, the Beatles broke up. The Mary Tyler Moore Show premiered on CBS. The first Earth Day was celebrated a half century ago, and Richard Nixon created the Environmental Protection Agency. Yes, Richard Nixon did, and signed the Clean Air Act. Closer to home, it was becoming clear to a couple of local doctors, Philip Rossman and Mayor Davidson, that there were people in the community who couldn't afford to pay for basic health care. So they borrowed a local dentist's office in Venice and began treating patients there for free after hours. On its 50th anniversary, the Venice Family Clinic has grown to operate in 12 West Side locations that serve nearly 28,000 patients per year. Elizabeth Forer is its CEO and executive director, and Dr. Michael Wilkes, who teaches medicine at UC Davis, he hosts KCRW's Second Opinion podcast, has volunteered his time at the clinic for many years and co-founded its teen clinic back in 1998. And I want to thank you both for being with us. Liz, thank you for being here.
It's great to be here. We're talking about my favorite subject, which is Venice Family Clinic.
Yeah. And Michael, always a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, Steve. Nice talking with you today.
Liz, I want to start with you because, you know, you get a sense of this is a, you say family clinic, right? Like it almost looks like you're looking at the demographic right there. Who walks through those doors?
Well, it's a rather large family. We see starting basically our prenatal clients, so prior to birth, all the way through old age. We have wonderful programs for families with young children and teens. As we mentioned, Michael had established the teen clinic. And then we move into adulthood. We try our best to prevent things, keep people well, make sure everyone has their immunizations and is healthy and able to live their lives. But we see a lot of people with diabetes and asthma, heart disease. We also see people who are homeless, 4,500 people who are homeless.
You just mentioned a lot of the things that you see. Give us a quick sense, though, of the kinds of services that you provide. I mean, how do you
do
that?
So we provide very comprehensive primary care, and it's primary care in its broadest definition. So it includes medical care, things you would go to your family doctor for, whether it's flu or cold, as well as chronic diseases like diabetes, high blood pressure. We also wrap services around that primary care, which we feel allow us to care for the whole person. So that includes mental health care, substance use treatment, dental care, health education, exercise classes, food security programs.
So this is like wellness, right?
It's starting where the person's at who comes to see us and working with them towards better health and wellness.
Are you prepared for the coronavirus? That's another thing that we're talking a lot about.
So we have trained our staff. We have flyers at our entrances and at our front desks showing the different symptoms, asking patients to tell us being aware of it. We're ready to isolate people who need that. And then from there, our County Department of Public Health has their numbers posted. We call them and we work together to make sure that person gets the best care possible.
Michael, a lot of people probably think of a place like Venice Family Clinic as this medical provider of last resort, a place that they would only go if they were really in desperate need. And we're talking, you know, basic bare bones care. Like something's happening to me and I need help. How would you compare the care that patients get at the family clinic to the care that they receive at big medical centers like where you are at UC Davis or UCLA?
Yeah, having worked at both places, I think that there's some major comparisons that we can make in a moment. But I think it's worth pointing out, Steve, that the west side of Los Angeles has a couple of magical and wondrous gems in their pocket. KCRW is certainly one of those. The Venice Family Clinic is another. The Venice Family Clinic's approach to healthcare is really, as Liz is suggesting, much more comprehensive. It's what we refer to as a medical home. So it is the dough, the donuts, the bake shop, the dissemination, et cetera. That is not the case at big medical centers, not only in the UC system, but in private medical centers. It just is not possible to coordinate care in the way that the Venice Family Clinic does. So that at Venice, there's a primary care provider, but that person is really the hub of providing care to, say, a diabetic patient. But that diabetic patient has behavioral health needs. They also perhaps have pharmaceutical needs in terms of drugs. They have dietary needs. Maybe they don't have access to good, high-quality food. If they do, perhaps they don't know how to prepare it or how to cook it. So all of these services, these wraparound services, are available to all of the patients. And yes, many of the patients, 75% of them, live below the poverty line, but 25% of them don't. And they're choosing to go to Venice because it really is the place to get high quality care.
So, I mean, it sounds like a really different approach to health care. And you know, that you think it has advantages over the way most people get medical care in America. Is that right?
Yeah, Steve. Just think, or listeners should think of the last time they went to a doctor and, you know, the doctor sends you to a specialist and perhaps you need to see a counselor or a psychiatrist or, you know, and all of those things require new appointments. And then you have to get babysitters and you have to get parking. And the Venice Family Clinic is a one-stop shop. It isn't to say that they can provide everything. They can't. But all of that stuff is coordinated and much of it can be done in-house. Anyways, it's exactly the way medicine should be practiced, which is as a team sport.
Liz Forer, boy, it does apply to me because when I was, you know, whatever, 26, 27 years old, I was working at a job that didn't provide insurance, right? Or health insurance. And I walk into your clinic and it's like, look, I don't have a lot of money. I don't have health insurance. Do I get treated?
What we would say is we'd love to see you. Let's see if you're eligible for something. We'll meet with our health insurance enrollment worker. But if you're sick today or you need care today, we will see you today. And then we will do a series of screenings with you very quickly so that we can offer the services you may need in addition to the reason you pop by. So say you pop by because you had a sore toe. By the time our doctor saw you, they might say, Steve, you have a sore toe. Here's what we're going to do with that today. But we noticed that your blood pressure is high and that you mentioned to our medical assistant that you've been very anxious because you've been caring for your elderly mother. We could have you see a social worker today and have a discussion and see if you might want to have some ongoing help there, both in terms of working on the issues with your mother as well as your anxiety about it. And we will start you on some blood pressure medication and like to see you back in a few weeks to see how that's working.
And if I don't qualify for one of the programs that you're researching?
We would ask you for a donation. And if you can't make that, we'd say great to see you here.
The Affordable Care Act came into existence, gosh, how long has it been now? About 10 years,
10
right?
Years, 10 years, yeah.
10 years. Obamacare. Did things change under Obamacare for you with more people insured?
Obamacare is the best thing to happen to the healthcare system since Medicare and Medicaid. When I came to the clinic in 1994, 90% of our patients were uninsured. We hadn't expanded to the 12 locations yet, and so we were turning away almost 50 people a day because we just couldn't see them. Now 75% of our patients have Medicare or Medi-Cal and are insured. The others are uninsured, but we're much more able to care for more uninsured because we have more sustenance and stability because so many are insured. One out of three people in California have Medi-Cal, which is a huge number, but it shows you the need in our state. And that means they're qualifying for it because they live under the poverty level.
One out of three.
One out of three.
That's an amazing fraction, by the way, right?
Yes, and it shows you the importance of healthcare for all.
You mentioned you're in many locations, a dozen locations now, but you also do a lot of work in the community with street teams or pop-ups. Tell us a little bit about that.
So we have 9 street medicine teams in the community, ranging from Malibu to Mid-City in Los Angeles. Either a physician or physician's assistant or nurse practitioner goes out with a very carefully designed backpack and also with housing partners that we have who do regular street outreach every day. And they meet up with the folks who have been identified by those housing partners as having medical needs. And we essentially do healthcare right in the field. We have great technology in the field, so we access our electronic health records in the field, and they can see everything that's on record there. So it's amazing what we can do in the field. We're also trying to gain trust with our patients in the field, so they'll come into the clinic where we can do more comprehensive care.
Michael, along those lines, when we talk about health care, we're in the midst of a presidential election. There's a lot of discussion about universal health care to expand upon Obamacare, make sure that everyone has access to health care, Medicare for all, perhaps. It's not a new idea, universal health care, by the way, even here in the United States, right?
Right. This whole concept of universal health care goes back to Europe dozens of years. But here in the United States, very interesting history in that about the time of the Venice Family Clinic, Nixon was the president. Listeners may remember that we were somewhere 2 or 3 years into these two new social programs, legacies of President Johnson, called Medicare for the elderly and Medicaid for those that were poor. Nixon came in and decided that he wanted to try to dismantle these. He had a very difficult time even at that point. But there was a senator from Massachusetts, Ted Kennedy, who decided that this was a time for comprehensive health insurance, and worked very hard with the Nixon administration to negotiate what was soon to be a comprehensive health care insurance program. They came very close to signing that. Nixon and Ted Kennedy both agreed on the concepts. Kennedy thought he could bring the Senate along. Nixon promised to bring the White House. It was at that point that unions came involved, and unions felt that they would get less good care if they went with a universal, federally monitored program than union-provided health care, and they tore the whole thing up.
And so because of the reluctance of unions, they lost the Democrats.
They lost the Democrats, and the program fell apart. And it was, obviously, listeners will know, many years before we began to have the courage to do some additional work around Medicare and Medicaid. It was Bush administration that added sort of pharmaceutical benefits, and then Obama came in and with his Affordability Care Act. It is worth saying that the Affordability Care Act has gotten negative publicity from the Republicans, but it's enormously popular in the medical profession. This is not controversial. Whether you're talking about private doctors, or you're talking about people in clinics like the Venice Family Clinic, or you're talking about university healthcare systems, the Affordability Care Act has been a win-win-win for America.
And I mean, doctors just want to be paid, right? I mean, for the services. And if more people are insured, that will happen. There's a better chance of that happening, right?
Well, Steve, let me take a Venice Family Clinic tack here. Yes, doctors want to be paid. They have gone to medical school and they work hard. Most of us work 70 or 80 hours. But it is important to recognize that a place like Venice Family Clinic, they have about 1,300 volunteers, people who volunteer there regularly, of which 400 of them are physicians. These are men and women who range from residency all the way up to near retirement, who are donating their services to the Venice Family Clinic because they want this idea that they're giving back to the community and doing something for people that would have no other access.
You have to be able to make a living doing what you're doing, right? But where are we when we talk about, you know, the kind of money that we're spending on healthcare in this country?
We're way overspending, right? We spend far more than twice as much per person as the next most developed country in the world. So we have a major problem. What we're spending money on isn't buying us high quality. We're still the 37th healthiest country on earth, meaning 36 countries who spend far less than we do are healthier, live longer, have fewer babies dying, have less diabetes, et cetera, et cetera.
Liz, why does the need for a Venice Family Clinic, why is there such a need for it when there's so much money in this country?
Venice Family Clinic started because our healthcare system was broken, and it is still broken. We are both the Band-Aid and the cure. Hopefully, there will be a time when everybody who is in this country, whether they're documented or undocumented, can get care when they need it, and that care is not based on how much money they have in their pocketbook or whether they have an expensive insurance policy. That is truly universal health care. We're human beings. Everybody deserves to be able to see a doctor when they need one. The idea that a young child is sick and the family may be trying all kinds of home remedies because they're afraid of that bill is really a spectacular leap when you think of all the dollars we have in this country and all the things we choose to spend our money on.
I want to thank you both, Dr. Michael Wilkes, who teaches medicine at UC Davis. He hosts the KCRW podcast, Second Opinion, and he's a volunteer at the Venice Family Clinic, has for many, many years. Michael, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
And Elizabeth Forer, who's the CEO and executive director of Venice Family Clinic. Liz, thank you.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for us today. Next week, beauty in the streets. She cuts hair. She does makeovers for the homeless. Meet the person who goes around making people living on the streets and in shelters more beautiful. I hope you join us for that next week. The Bookworm reads you a story next on KCRW. We, by the way, are online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast. We'd love to talk to you every day. We'll send it right to your inbox. Share your thoughts with us as well. kcrw.com/askgreaterLA. I'm at Radio Chio on Twitter. Hope you can join me there. Jenna Cagle, Rebecca Mooney, Danielle Chiriguayo produced our programs this week. Sonia Geis was our editor. Phil Richards, Mike Stark, and Ray Guarna mixed and engineered the program. Special thanks to Christine Camito and Amy Ta. Christian Bordahl oversees the operation. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Honored for your ears and for your time. Have a great day.